From KRCB in Santa Rosa, it's Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour with Michelle Anna Jordan.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from the dairy families who own Cabot Creamery, 5 generations of farming and making naturally aged cheddar cheese in Vermont. On the web at go.coop.
Come on, in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining, I do.
Come over here, kid, will you, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil, and you fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? Add a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Yeah, you always want some more. That's why you're tuning into Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. I'm Michelle Anna Jordan. Thanks for joining us this evening. Before I introduce my guests, and we have a full house tonight, I have to talk about my day. I have to talk about my weekend because I made a huge mistake yesterday, and I drove down what I guess you could call Mall Alley. It's something I never do at this time of year, but suddenly I'm driving past places like Costco and all these big, huge stores, and people are in this frenzy, and they're cutting each other off, and they're mean. And then I went to this store, and I was on an errand. I wasn't Christmas shopping. I've been ordered by my feng shui consultant to get a mirror to put over my stove, and I can't find the right mirror. So I went to some of the stores down there, and I had 2 or 3 different people in one store push my cart out of the way. Just take my cart and push it. People had that sort of look of frantic greediness. And I remembered why I don't, I'll make a confession here, don't celebrate Christmas in the traditional way. When you think about what a lot of Christmas cards say when they arrive, it's such a great message. So many say peace on earth. And what could be better than that? And then they just go out and practically tear at each other in malls, buying things that I think get taken back or put in the back of a closet or taken to, a thrift store. So I've been giving gifts to my children and my close friends on Twelfth Night, which is January 6th, for many, many, many years, more than 2 decades. I try to have friends in during December, get to see the people that maybe I haven't seen. And if I do any shopping before the big holiday, I go to local places. And so I corrected what I did yesterday by going to a really sweet crafts fair today. It was in down a little side street in San Anselmo. Everything there was made by members of Ahula Halau down in Marin County. And there, off in the corner, there was a little band playing Hawaiian music. I even danced to one of the songs with some of my hula sisters. And I came back with, I got 3 scarves, 3 shopping bags, the kind of bags that you want to keep in your car for when you go grocery shopping. Oh, I got a dish towel. I got some little hula girl cookies. And I had a wonderful time, and I got a lot of hugs, and there was no stress whatsoever. And afterwards, I had a leisurely lunch with some of my hula sisters, and there was no holiday stress. I went home and took a nap, and I thought, this is what December's about. And there's ways to incorporate that into your life without necessarily going to the extremes that I decided to go to a long time ago. I like Twelfth Night. for a lot of reasons, and we'll talk about that on an upcoming show, because I think that it expresses a lot of important things about the season, one of them being that by January 6th, you can tell that the days are getting longer. So I think that's a really nice time to celebrate. It's also a convenient time for my girls to come home. But if you do give Christmas gifts, there are lots of ways that you can keep your money going to people who, whether you know them or not, if you did know them, you'd care about them, and they would care about you, and keep your corner store, your neighborhood shops, thriving so that it's not an anonymous corporation taking up the real estate in the town where you live. And on that note, I'm going to introduce my guests. And first of all, Jill Hales of Barn Diva. You really put the show together for me tonight, Jill. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us all.
I really appreciate it. And, of course, you have both Barn Diva and the next-door studio Barn Diva, which houses Artisan Farmers. And Andrea Barrett is here to talk about Artisan Farmers. And our old friend... Oh, no, I'm wrong. Yet, you know, you can tell me when I'm wrong. You can say...
Studio Barn Diva is Artisan Farmers, which is an extension of Barn Diva and Dragonfly.
Hey, guys, I was just going to introduce Bonnie.
And Andrea's down the block.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. I was thinking you're sitting there holding this, what I thought was a Barn Diva card. Bonnie Z, who's been on Mouthful at least two other times. Dragonfly Hillsburg is inside Studio Barn Diva. And then, of course, Dragonfly Farm or Dragonfly Floral.
It's both. The place is Dragonfly Farm, and then the business is Dragonfly Floral.
And that's over on West Side Road near the freeway. A wonderful little oasis of beauty. And then we have one of my favorite bartenders, Luca Feldman. And it's great to see you across the microphone, Luca. So let's start out talking about Artisan Farmers and the building, Barn Diva. Oh, and then, Andrea, we should say, what is your business?
I have a business in Healdsburg, which is called Arboretum. We specialize in ethical apparel for men and women.
And where are you located?
We're located right on Healdsburg Avenue, 332 Healdsburg Avenue, just off the plaza.
Okay, great. All right, on that note, let's just jump on in. Tell us about Studio Barn Diva.
Well, you know, we've had such a wonderful response to the Barn Diva building from the beginning when we opened, and people would come in and see things that they wanted to own, to be honest. They loved the food and the drinks, but the environment and the objects in the environment seemed to strike a note. And when the building next door to Barn Diva became available, it had actually been the location of the original opera house in Healdsburg. That burnt down, and it became an auto body shop, and then it had a subsequent owners. It made me feel that we should take it, primarily to sell the things people had wanted, but also to extend a passion that you know I have, Michelle, which is to buy more local produce from small farms at the height of the season. And if we had a retail outlet, we could make jams and condiments, and this would be even a further commitment. Our whole menu at Barn Diva is based on local sourcing, but there's a lot more to be done to support small farms. That was the beginning. Those two things were the beginning inspiration. But once I opened the shop, I found people from all over the world that were making objects that I very much wanted to stay in play, handmade knives that had been made the same way since the 16th century, textiles from places like Bali and India. And these were fair traded items, but they were also single family ownership, family businesses like mine that had been in operation for a long time that the children had taken over. Or they were single artisans that were just working on their own and wanted to have their objects in the world. And I saw that the idea of sustainable, which at Barn Diva is very much local produce. You don't put raspberries on a plane. It's easy to say that. When it comes to objects, I really feel that we don't want to close our world up. I don't want to. I think we've all suffered a lot to open the dialogue we have with foreign with people all over the world. This is one way to bring objects they make into our life and also keep traditions like in textiles and glass blowing and wood carving in the world. And so we know everyone and every story behind the things we sell at the shop, and it has enriched our lives just immeasurably. And the response of people that come in, they'll pick things up and they hold them for longer because there is a person behind who made that. Then we move in and we tell them the story, and of course they're charmed or not, they have the money or not. It's kind of a sideline after that, but it's really grown in the year we've been open. We just celebrated our first anniversary, and in that year the store has evolved from its beginnings as just sort of Barn Diva Jr.
Well, congratulations on the anniversary. Bonnie, tell us about what goes on at Dragonfly Healdsburg.
Well, the store really is more my daughter's than mine. It's we share staff, we share product, we share flowers, but my daughter's really the personality behind our store in town. We carry flowers. At this time of year, we have a lot of product that we make on the farm, wreaths and really fun Christmas trees and things like that. People see the wreaths there, and they want to know how to make them. I actually spent this morning doing a workshop with a group of women who had come for the last 2 years. I believe there were seven women, and they've decided they want to do this forever. They came from the city, and they made their holiday decorations themselves, drank a little champagne, had a wonderful time, and it made their Christmas a little more personal. You know, and it was fun having them be part of the farm.
Mm-hmm. So that takes place. The workshops take place at the farm.
They do.
And then at Dragonfly Floral, you can get things that are already made.
Exactly. Basically. And people can order flower arrangements, mm-hmm. too. Most things are made at the farm and then brought into the store.
Mm-hmm. And then you're doing something a little different this year, if I understood the website properly. You're renting some of your extraordinary props.
Exactly. We have a lot of unusual props. And also, my future son-in-law is a wonderful artist, and he does amazing armatures and things like that. And we'll be renting those along with you know, other types of things that we have, candelabras and props, but it's all on the website.
Mm-hmm. And we'll be giving, as usual on Mouthful, we will be giving phone numbers and websites at the end of the show. So if you don't got a pen in your hand, you got time to get one. And Andrea, Arboretum, tell us about Arboretum.
Arboretum is the brainchild of Kate Morrison, my business partner, and myself. We've been in business for just about 7.5 short months, and we spent a very, very long time coming up with the concept of Arboretum. The idea behind it is to offer responsible clothing for women and men. We focus on getting as many things that are made domestically and with fibers that come from the earth. We specialize in a lot of organic cottons, as well as silk and wool and cashmere. It's a really fun project right now, and the whole world of eco fashion is sort of taking off, and it's really fun to be a part of it and to be one of the pioneers in this area.
Yeah, you really, if you pay attention, you're absolutely right. It is really taking off, and you're seeing more and more of that. Luke, I want to bring you in so that we can have a free-for-all soon. What are you doing at Barn Diva these days?
Well, of course, you know, keeping true to the seasonality of the restaurant, our menus and our drink menus have taken a turn for winter flavors and whatnot. And I also just think that we should promote the idea that while you're out there, you know, shopping around, that you should take a break from time to time and come enjoy one of our lovely handcrafted cocktails that we are, as I said, using local stuff. And we've been infusing things for the last several months so that we can start making cocktails with, you know, the flavors of winter.
What are
cinnamons
some of your winter?
And cardamoms. And okay. We've been infusing Asian pears with vodkas and brandies. And we're just very excited about, you know, a new season, a new set of flavors and exciting things. And those are all in the works, and we encourage you to come in. Taste them.
And what is your position at Barn Diva?
My position is general manager.
Okay.
And
but you do some stuff behind the bar, too, don't
Oh,
you?
Absolutely. Yeah. I still keep, you know, one shift or so behind mm-hmm. the bar when I can, and then also on the floor a good 2 to 3 days a week just mm-hmm. to, you know, keep in touch with that. But I also am very much involved in our events that we're doing, and we host a number of weddings every year, as well as, you know, local community events and different things. So a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, more than I was doing before, but also still very much involved and on the floor. And I love to, you know, see people and to, you know, be a part of the community, keep an eye on what's going on and be involved and, you know, see, as I said.
You are listening to Mouthful on KRCB.
Wine, wine, wine. was pink champagne that stole my gal from me. It was pink champagne that stole my gal from me. It was pink champagne, where can my lover be? It was pink champagne that left me feeling blue.
You are listening to Mouthful, the One Country's Most Delicious Hour. We are talking tonight about shopping locally and buying ethically. With me, Jill Hells of Barn Diva and Studio Barn Diva, Luca Feldman, also of Barn Diva, Bonnie Z of Dragonfly Farm and Floral, and Andrea Barrett, otherwise known as Andy, of Arboretum. So it seems that one of the things people like you are doing, I think this one I'm in my optimistic state of mind, is sort of carving those pathways like rain carves in soil, so to establish places for other people to go. The very first people who started trying to sell local, sell ethically, you know, had to find those paths because we have a big screaming corporate acquisition system that is real easy for people. So what are you guys, I think of you guys as pioneers in many ways. So let's talk about how you do that part. Anybody jump on in?
I think the conversation about the carbon footprint when it comes to sourcing objects that you're going to have some longevity with, you're going to keep in your lives, gets people a little bit crazy. None of us want to have a guilt, but we all, by nature, I believe, are forage. Meaning we love to shop. That's the modern term for it. And we are materialistic in getting those objects to have a little bit more meaning, knowing who made them, knowing where they came from. I think that does more than obviate a guilt that we're just using too many things, but it actually gives us objects that have a sense of history that we bring forward. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty much in everything we've been doing with Barn Diva mm-hmm. as well.
But what I wanted to talk about in this segment is how you do that. Mm-hmm. How do you find... how do you find the artists and farmers, the ones who aren't in Healdsburg? I mean, we know how you find the ones in Healdsburg. And mm-hmm. Bonnie, you know, you do, how many weddings did you do this last year? You know, you did a lot of weddings, and I know that your garden can't produce all the flowers that you need to operate a floral business. And so, and I know that, you know, you don't have a distillery at Barn Diva, but you're not grabbing Smirnoffs from the distributor either. So well, what I'm curious
so
is
specific,
how you great. Guys get those things.
I was in Bali a few years ago, and I was driving along and saw a guy that was doing the most extraordinary paintings. He was doing them by hand with a blank sheet of paper. He used these brushes. They were amazingly complicated. I bought one. When I opened the shop, I wrote to him, and I brought over a number more of his pictures. When I'm in Paris, in France, I will meet with organizations that have gathered together different villages in Africa that work with women's co-ops in India. Mm-hmm. And all of them will bring forth things. For me, something has to be beautiful for it to be in the shop. I sell beautiful things. I love that about it. Mm-hmm. But when I look at all of these things, and I know that, for instance, we sell these nests that are made from the root of the vetiver tree. That's used in the African villages that I source from to hold up the banks of their irrigation ditches. When the French came in there, this one fair trade organization, and said, what do you have around here that we can start a cottage industry with? Instead of the old-fashioned way of bringing in something like jewelry to make that has no meaning to them, it doesn't reflect their culture at all, they had weaving skills. They had the vetiver trees. Voila, we sell these extraordinary nests made out of the roots of vetiver. Yeah, they're in nests, 2-3 sizes. And when you put them in the shower or in the steam, the smell comes back again. Of course, vetiver being a wonderful mm-hmm. fragrance. So, you know, you travel. You need to travel to do this for my job. Mm-hmm. And I say, you know, I travel all over the world. This is a great excuse for me to write off my trips, mm-hmm. basically. Mm-hmm. But wherever I go, if you hit the ground, you will find people that are making things local to their area. And then you just ask the questions as where they're getting their materials, and you bring them in. Mm-hmm. It's hard bringing them such a distance, though, it is.
One thing you mentioned was glass blowing. Mm-hmm. Will you talk about that?
I have a young group of Frenchmen right now in the shop that blow entire lamps out of a single blow. And they're modern, and they're new, and they're very, very beautiful. They are not inexpensive. But for me, the fact that they're taking that art to that next step is really important. I don't want the shop just to speak of old things, you know, the old way textiles were made. I want to see what young artisans that may not have big corporations behind them are doing with materials. And so for me, for instance, those glass objects are really great. We also sell beautiful vases from Germany that are cut in the way they've been cut for a very long time. Here's a great story. There was an American girl I met in New York that had been traveling in Czechoslovakia and found that the glass factories there that did etched glass were, all the old men were dead that did it or dying out, and they had closed these factories. And she so fell in love with this beautiful, very old-fashioned type of glass that she went and raised the money and has reopened the glass studio there. It's called Artel. We carry her things in. So that's a young person that isn't even have the skill that sees a need to keep it in the world and goes in, and now these older glass people are teaching the younger ones how to do it in that village. That's the kind of sourcing that you do where, you know, you're all over the world, but in a way, it's very local to where it is.
Sure.
It's very important to their local economy.
Yeah. And what about you, Andrea? How do you guys
We have
things?
Some similarities, in fact. Both of our stores follow a similar formula and I think complement each other really well. For our store, really, it's hours and hours, actually years and of research, just constant research that goes into the lines and the collections that we carry. There are designers and creators of these lines that do the legwork and the hitting the pavement type of stuff that Jill is talking about, where they go into these small communities and see how things are being made. So if you have questions and want answers, you can go directly to the lines, the collections themselves, and say, hey, where does this come from? You know, what do you know? What can you tell us? But really, to guarantee our product, it is a lot of research. We really strongly believe that we have to be able to back everything that we sell in our store. There is a story with a lot of what we provide, and it's really important to know that story and to believe in it and to be able to guarantee what you're selling. And we really like to be able to stand behind all of our merchandise.
And you do just clothing, right? Men's and women's clothing?
Correct, clothing and apparel. So we bring in some shoes and, you know, some,
shoes,
some jewelry and things like that. Yeah, the shoes are a little tricky, but we have some really interesting stuff coming in. So there are... there are some things that I can relate to with what Jill talks about. We do try to source as many lines domestically as possible, which means made here in the United States. However, there are some lines that we carry that are just absolutely beautiful that come from all over the world. A line called Eden, which is made by Ali Hewson, who is Bono's wife from U2. She's working with Rogan Gregory, who is a green pioneer in the eco world, and they make beautiful clothes, but they try to source locally within communities around the world as much as possible. So if they're using silks, it comes from India. If they are using cotton, it's organic cotton that comes from Peru. They also make a lot of denim from Africa, which is interesting. So they try to source their material and then have the garments made within the same industry so they really can give back to the people in those communities. And that is an exception to our rule of trying to source as domestically as possible if we can really get the backstory and know that these communities are being supported 100% and in the most positive way possible, then we feel really confident about bringing those products in. And the result is beautiful, and the clothes are amazing.
Hey, and Bonnie, what about flowers and flowers? Related things?
Well, flowers are a tough one because of the transitory nature of flowers, and people really don't want to spend a huge amount on flowers. When you're giving a gift, you know, you want something beautiful, but something affordable, and you know that it's not going to last very long. We grow as much as we possibly can. We have 6 acres of plant material. It's not all flowers. We grow a lot of other kinds of plant material.
Willow,
but a lot of other kinds of foliage plants that have wonderful forms and colors. And once we have a frost or freeze, I mean, we were 26 degrees the other night, so all of the roses and dahlias and all of the flower material pretty much is gone. We have beautiful foliage, but what we usually do is source locally. We buy a lot of our flowers at this time of year, entering the season also from a grower in Petaluma that grows hydroponically. And pretty conscientiously, they don't use...
they do a lot of roses, right?
They do a lot of roses. They're growing a lot of other things now, too. the company we work with is Nevy Brothers.
Yeah, I used to get, before the Sebastopol Farmers Market started, I would buy a big bouquet of roses every week mm-hmm. from them.
Yeah, well, Lou, it's a family farm, and Lou's sons now are working in the business too, so we feel really good about working with them. It's a very personal relationship.
Mm-hmm.
We don't like buying from South America, and we were talking about this earlier, that we've been opposed to buying from South America. What's happening is a lot of the American farms have disappeared. There aren't a lot of flower farms, even in California anymore. It's all gone to South America. Soon, South American growers are not going to be selling here in this country either. They're going to be selling more in Europe because Europeans will buy flowers and spend more for flowers than Americans will. So it's kind of an interesting situation. You know, people like to buy their flowers at the grocery store when they're buying for themselves, but at a florist when they're buying for someone else, buying a gift.
That's an interesting distinction, I think.
There's a book that came out recently called Flower Confidential, and she makes the point that when people buy for themselves, they'll go to the farmer's market or to the grocery store or pretty much any place to buy flowers. But if they're buying for an event or for a gift, they'll go to a florist.
I wonder, to some degree, that might be delivery, perhaps, because florists will deliver.
No, I think
it's because...
Or do you
think it feels more special?
I think so, because it is more special.
Uh-huh.
And people don't really have the confidence to put together an arrangement.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. Luca, let's bring you in. Talk to me about Hangar One. I've heard a rumor.
Is this about Hangar One's new green liqueur that may be or may not be coming out at some point?
Does its traditional name start with an A?
And end in synth, yes. I believe so.
You know, I have 5 bottles of the real thing at home.
Oh, wow.
They're coming to your house.
But not Hangar One.
No.
So tell me.
From what I've heard, and it's all been kept rather
and Hangar One, we should say where Hangar One is.
Is St. George Spirits, and that's at the old Alameda Air Force Base mm-hmm. In Hangar One. And they've been making vodka principally, as well as single malt scotch. And using actually whole fruit and doing it in a natural and organic way as opposed to...
Yeah, they have some really interesting infusions.
Really interesting infusions. And they put a little twist on it. For example, the citrus that they use is actually the Buddha's hand.
Buddha hand,
as apart from just like traditional lemon. And then instead of orange, they use mandarin blossoms. And they actually use the blossoms, so the vodka has a kind of opaqueness to it and is beautiful. And they've been... developing absinthe, from what I understand, for some years now, and every year kind of, I believe, and I hope I'm not getting anyone in trouble, little amounts of it, but not for sale, for personal mm-hmm. use, of course. And I believe that the label is now in development.
Really?
And so hopefully will be coming out
now,
relatively soon.
I read somewhere that it's no longer illegal.
Well, they've removed a certain element of it, which they believe gave you the hallucinogenic properties.
Have they removed all the wormwood?
I don't think
it's not absinthe.
From the wormwood that it is.
Okay.
From what I understand, they have removed that, but I don't understand. I think that you get it, the hallucinogenic effects or the euphoric effects from different property that they haven't removed necessarily.
But they've removed the wormwood?
Parts of it, yeah.
Okay, but not 100%.
No, they've had to, in order to release it, make amendments to what the traditional uh-huh. recipes were, and I'm not exactly sure as to what they've had to do, but I know that that they've had to remove properties that were supposed to give you that extra huh. euphoric and...
Well, darn.
This isn't what Van Gogh...
You know, there's... I'm not sure if it's jade absinthe. There were several people working on releasing traditional... absinthe. And one was a guest on Mouthful mm-hmm. by phone. He was, I think he actually called us from Paris, and I think he's originally from New Orleans. He's, forgetting his name right now, he's a chemist, and he got an original bottle from back in the 19th century, did a chemical footprint, and began producing, bought a distillery in the Loire Valley, and began producing it, and you can buy it online.
Really?
And it is delivered by courier.
Wow.
Last I checked, now I'm sure it's gone up because of the fall of the dollar, I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago, cost about $110 a bottle, and that included the shipping from either France or England. I think it was actually shipped from England, and courier service to you.
Well, at least you get it, because I think, isn't it, Bonnie, your daughter Carlisle was bringing... were trying to bring some.
Oh no! Did she get confiscated?
They had been told that it was legal to bring it in, and it was all confiscated.
They learned differently. Yeah.
I stood in front of my hotel mirror, Shane. That's the name of the winery. But they let me just walk on through.
You know,
I had five bottles
in my
bag.
Drinks. I've had in Paris and in Sydney, and I don't think it's nowhere near
what we read about
absinthe used to be. Mm-hmm. They have to dumb it down, and there's no way the American government's going to let you bring in a hallucinogenic.
Well, the way that they dumb it down, I think, is two ways. One, it's lower alcohol than. The big scandal in Europe had to do with the adulterated versions rather than the real thing. But the ones I brought in, or actually the first one I got was from Japan. And I had it for about a year before I opened it. Mm-hmm. And then I set the scene and I tried it. And it absolutely is. Huh. There's no question.
Wow.
But the first effect, I didn't know this was going to be another show about absinthe. The first effect you get is that of having a cocktail. If you want to pay attention to deeper experiences, it's there for the taking, but it is extremely subtle. And it certainly, I think it's like 1/10 the amount of artemisia, wormwood, that was in it in the 19th century. But there's the way that I describe it is, and y'all should know Dan Noreen over at Wine Exchange in Sonoma, who collects original absinthe posters, the originals. It's extraordinary. Mm-hmm. He and I talk about absinthe whenever we see each other. There's this feeling, first of all, it intensifies colors, especially the blues and greens that were very common in the posters. Intensifies the color. It stretches out time a little bit, so time seems to just be moving a little bit more slowly. And then there's a physical element that I describe as feeling like you have velvet underneath your skin.
Ooh.
And if you want to get drunk on it, you can be stupid and get drunk on it. That was not at all my interest. I 19th century literature was my major. So I had a cocktail, I had a few almonds, and I think within probably a 3 to 4 hour period, I had three small cocktails and just paid attention and can now talk with authority. So it's really when the sun's going down, this weather, you have a fire, it's a very pleasant cocktail.
Let's keep our fingers crossed, Hangar One pulls it off.
Yeah.
Will you have to build a new lounge to serve them?
I don't know.
People may never leave.
Yes, well, we certainly sort of slightly veered off topic, but you can't bring up absinthe without.
No.
I realize now I've had it in the back of my mind that I wanted to talk to you about it. It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan. How you doing? Thanks for tuning in. If you are just tuning in, we are talking about, in part, we're talking about avoiding malls and generic superstores that, you know, here's the measure. You get home at any time after having been shopping, and if you're really grumpy and angry, you're probably shopping in the wrong place. Okay. If you come home and you feel happy, energized, satisfied in a nice way, you're probably shopping the right way. So on that note, we're switching subjects slightly to weddings because both Bonnie Z of Dragonfly Floral and Jill Hales of Barn Diva, Luca Feldman of Barn Diva, you all have to deal with weddings. And I think this shift to green weddings might be a really good thing. I was a caterer for a really long time, and I had to get out before I killed a bride. They are one of her aunts or a mother. People kind of get crazy about their expectations, and I heard this story. This was just a few months ago, and I actually thought of you, Bonnie. A bride was suing the florist because the hydrangeas in the table arrangements were the wrong shade. They weren't dark enough. The thing that astonished me the most was that this bride or her poor father or mother spent $27,500 on table arrangements. And now she was suing what, for like $4 million?
Oh, yeah. It was in the millions.
Yeah, because of breach of contact and emotional distress. Mm-hmm. They weren't dark magenta. They were light pink. It's like, wow. I'm so glad I got out of the wedding business. But you're having a good time.
We're having a great time. We started out doing weddings saying, if you love the place, then trust us. We'll do anything, but we want to source everything locally. And it was contra...
I love that.
It was
trust
contra
us.
The whole buy low, sell high, which is what caterers sort of make their money on. But we were our desire was to extend the Barn Diva menu to it. This is like the most important day of your life, or should be. You want people to go home and talk about everything, including what a great meal they have. We get letters from just guests at weddings saying that was just the most fabulous wedding. Interestingly, Bonnie and I were both at a wedding launch of a magazine recently, and I had five caterers from San Francisco, high-end, come up and say, we've heard about your weddings, and this is the way forward. And it's nice to think that they're going to spend the money to do that, because it does cost more. But you absolutely have a wedding that people taste the difference.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you don't let outside caterers in.
No,
you guys
don't.
Do all the food.
Barn Diva does everything.
Yeah. And so how does that work? Because you are a restaurant open to the public. Do you close down when you have a wedding?
It's difficult. Luca is a master at juggling. Usually we
Luca's a master. You know, you're a snake charmer, young man.
Thank you very much.
Will you explain how it works?
I mean, it depends, obviously, on how big the wedding is. If it's, you know, a smaller wedding and you don't mind compromising a little bit on terms of privacy, then we could certainly, you know, accommodate a wedding, you know, in part of the space without having to close. But for the most part, I think people obviously want to have the utmost privacy, and they also want to, you know, have the full use of the space. We're very privileged. We're in town, and you have inside and outdoor space, and being able to kind of make use of that and to kind of start outside, beautiful ceremony, and then move inside for, you know, cocktails and, you know, past hors d'oeuvres, and then to re-adjourn outside again for a beautiful dinner, as you described, which is such a talking point. I think people are so accustomed to weddings that are kind of like, you know, in a banquet hall of some hotel with no windows, and, you know, obviously the food is not the main attraction, but, you know, to put on these menus at these weddings, and with just the presentation and the way that the, you know, hors d'oeuvres are plated and served, you know, we do get a letter practically from every single wedding that we've done saying our guests have just been ringing off the hook, telling us how amazing everything was and what it is. And a lot of it, you know, is we're in, you know, Sonoma County, and it's beautiful. We've created a beautiful space, and everything grows here. So to be able to kind of tell people right away, we're going to put together a menu that reflects not only your tastes, but, you know, what's in season and what's, you know, local here. It's very exciting. It's a whole other dynamic than just choosing whether you're going to have, you know, fish or chicken, but, like, you know, what kind of fish and what's going to go with it and, mm-hmm. you know, what's local. And a lot of times it's difficult because people want to know in advance, and you have to wait because you don't know if you're going to be able to mm-hmm. get halibut that day if the fisherman dropped it off or whatnot. And so it's just really exciting. And, like, you know, all the different aspects of it, using, you know, local vendors, local florists, local musicians, mm-hmm. and putting together something that just people will remember for the rest of their lives, local mm-hmm. photographers, you mm-hmm. know, all of it. It's really fun and making people so, so happy.
Who do you use for cakes?
For cakes, we've started to actually do them ourselves now. We have a very exciting new pastry chef who's joined us, and we've, the last couple weddings we've done, we did them ourselves. Other than that, you know, we suggest a different people. Locally, again, you know, in town, we, mm-hmm. the downtown bakery is wonderful,
yes.
and
yeah.
Costo Bakery also is wonderful. Mm-hmm. And then also some private citizens who used to be, mm-hmm. Private citizens, who used to be bakers.
Jen Costello still does fabulous cakes.
Yeah. And so, you know, wherever possible, local. But now we're doing that part of it as well ourselves, uh-huh. which is really
and
fun.
We do a bridal registry at the shop. And, of course, people can come in and see the flowers. And there's that whole connection between, you know, Dragonfly and Barn Diva, which we've had from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. So do you do the flowers for the weddings at Barn Diva?
We do many of the weddings, mm-hmm. yes.
I would say most of them. Like,
yeah, and they're booking up like mad for next year. It's interesting, though. There's a lot of interest in green weddings now. We're on a couple of websites. One is Organic Wedding, and another one is called Porto Verde. And I get emails all the time from people all over the country saying, I want a green wedding. I want to be, you know. And then they say, do you ship?
So
well,
what?
Let me tell you how to yeah, well, do this.
A little problem with the concept. Can we describe what is a green wedding? I'll jump in and describe what that is.
I think that what people have in mind is less waste, mm-hmm. Not these huge amounts of wasted food, wasted materials in mm-hmm. terms of flower arrangements, mm-hmm. for example.
What about the bridesmaids? Do they get to wear something they might actually conceivably wear again?
No, that hasn't changed, Michelle.
No.
Unless you just don't have
some things are eternal, and bad white bridesmaids dresses are one of them.
Yeah. No, I think that, you know, the food primarily and the flowers are what come to mind when people are planning a green wedding. I don't really think that they take into account too much else. The invitations, you know, recycled paper, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Joe?
Well, I've seen a few weddings, instead of giving a gift, you know, it's please make a contribution on our behalf to this local environmental agency or to UNICEF. We've had a number of those, and people who have overcome illnesses that, you know, feel very strongly about mm-hmm. that, obviously, and that they want people to support that. And so that's another way of, instead of, you know, buying something that's just, as you mentioned earlier, going to end up in the back of your, you know, closet or something, to actually put that money that you would, you know, spend on that into something that is going to be.
Primarily, though, I think it is the local sourcing of food and flowers. Those mm-hmm. are your big line items. Obviously, the wine, when you're in wine country, that's made and produced locally, so that you have that covered. Many of our spirits are local, but that isn't really a concern of ours.
It's the food.
Yes,
I mean, like, we work with
flowers.
Over 200 and something, as last I counted, purveyors that provide us with different things. And sometimes it's, you know, one person who'll just grow this one specific herb or the specific lettuce, and they're their own purveyor. And now we have to get stuff from them. And then, you know, so one salad could potentially have, you know, two or three different purveyors mm-hmm. that are contributing to it. And so
there's an education process, though. I know Bonnie has talked to me about this in the past, where you'll come in and you have an idea in your head that you may have had as you're a girl since you were 6 years old of what your wedding day is supposed to be. And then if someone comes to you and says, well, those flowers have to sort of come from Fiji and we may not want to, you know, there's mm-hmm. a growth here but you're going into a new life, and hopefully you have a certain part of you that's open, and the space will capture them, and they'll put their trust in us, and then we can edge them through. They love the menu. They'll mm-hmm. come to us now and say, where's everything coming from, and will it all be on the menu? And then, of course, for Barn Diva, that's the most wonderful way that we spread the word about what real food tastes like. When people go back to Texas or New York or wherever they're going, they go back and they talk about this menu that was locally sourced. Mm-hmm. Asking where food comes from is really the philosophy behind Barn Diva. And the weddings have been a better emissary for us for spreading that mm-hmm. than really.
Yeah, it's really an
interesting
element.
Then they go back
element.
And they find their own farmer's right. market, and they're yes. like, oh, yeah. it's you know, awoken something in them. And yes. they go back and try and, you know, support yeah. local farmers wherever they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting element. Are you doing mostly first weddings?
We're funny. I think our second wedding was a gay wedding. We've had a pregnant mm-hmm. bride. They just didn't get
several.
It together.
Mm-hmm.
We had several, probably, but one that I mean was
one
just to have her baby. And uh-huh. gorgeous. She was gorgeous.
Uh-huh.
But most of them are first weddings.
First weddings, yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah. When I was catering, I did a lot of first weddings, but I also did a lot of second weddings.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was interesting.
Sometimes they can relax more with the second wedding.
Sometimes.
You know, maybe the in-laws aren't
well,
even around
one of their
anymore.
Second weddings yeah. oftentimes is someone's first wedding and then yeah. the other
right,
person
one person's
on
first
second.
Wedding, another person's yeah. second wedding. Yeah, and then you sort of see the struggle of who wants.
What? And so yeah. I just don't care, just get it over with. The other one's like, but this is our day.
Yeah, but I'll never do this again.
There's also the sense with wedding rehearsal dinners or something like that where you have families coming together, and I think it behooves the venue to be able to make an environment that everybody feels welcome and that mixing of the families happens. And for me, the problem I had, you know, in my young, early married life and going to other friends' weddings were these venues where they move you in and move you out and move you in. And mm-hmm. They could have two weddings going on at the same time.
Yeah.
There's no personality there. There's no caring about you, and there's no time for the families in these groups to actually meld into one unit. That's what a wedding is. It isn't just the two people.
Mm-hmm.
It's the two families.
Families, yeah.
And I think taking that into account is really crucial to a successful you know, wedding.
What do you find people are wanting flower-wise for their weddings? I mean, I know that's a big subject, but let's talk about what do brides want to carry?
Whatever the current theme is in the wedding magazine.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they're really following the marketing trends.
Absolutely. There used to be just a few wedding magazines, and they were pretty hideous. But now people are looking at everything, as well as on the internet and looking at the big wedding sites, and people will latch on to something or a color combination, and that's what they want. What we do with clients is to get them out in the garden. We try to get people to come to the garden a little bit closer to the wedding so that things that'll be available be in bloom. And it's a very personal experience. We go through the garden with clippers and try out different combinations until it's exactly what they want. And very often it's quite a ways away from what they saw in the magazine, where someone will come to us and say, I do not want any roses. I want what this picture. And they'll go out in the garden and they'll say, I love that flower. What is that? It's a rose. Well, what about that one? I love that one too. What is that? That's a rose. So, and then someone will say, you know, I do not want any pink. Absolutely no pink. Oh, what a great color. Look at, what is that? That's pink.
I can vouch for Bonnie's arrangements. I got married about a year and a half ago, and of course had Dragonfly do all of our wedding flowers, and they were
orange.
Absolutely beautiful.
They were orange.
They were orange and green. I wanted lush. I wanted natural. I may have been a little more relaxed than most brides because I do know Bonnie and Carlisle, and I trust them so much, and I've seen their work. I've been very lucky that way, and I've been out to the farms, and I know everything
is
beautiful.
It's exquisite.
But she did sort of have this air of, hey, trust me, and it'll be okay. And the arrangements were so beautiful. Much of what was in there was edible. There were tomatillos. There were unripened blackberries, which were absolutely beautiful.
Oh, those are so
and still
pretty.
Really sturdy.
Yeah.
A lot of fresh greens. I think there were herbs, maybe some rosemary in there. So everything smelled really good, and it just looked very alive and very lush. And it was very clean and simple. And I didn't really have a big concept of what I wanted, but what they do is just beautiful. And really, if you just trust them, they can create
absolute
miracles.
I think the point is that even though these brides may come with an idea, once they talk to Bonnie, once they talk to Luca, they expand that.
And to
vision.
Be able to create it so that they have a hand in that creative process. I mean, people have mentioned to me that they get to go to, you know, Dragonfly Farms, and then they, you know, what they see on the table, they feel like they had a hand in creating, and that's always better than just picking something out of a, you know, book or
Absolutely.
Magazine and saying, I just want one like that.
Yeah, so you're really opening up a whole world to people when you take them through this process.
And that's really priceless.
Yeah. I think that's a really important point, Luca, because people don't have the opportunity to become involved creatively. And with a wedding, you know, if you're given the opportunity, the most amazing wedding I went to this summer was totally homemade. It was incredible. It included a parade around the plaza.
A friend of mine was in the parade. Yes, he told me about it. The description of that wedding was astonishing.
Fabulous. Yeah. Absolutely fabulous. And with my daughter planning for her wedding, her fiancé, they're going to pretty much do the same thing. Where they're going to create a lot of their
Every
own.
Wedding should have a parade.
Absolutely.
I actually think there should be more parades in general.
Everybody
we sell the idea if brides stay in, because we're in the center of Hillsburg, they stay in the hotels, that they do a promenade. It's quite common in Europe.
Yeah.
And they could have a fiddler or you know,
yes, absolutely.
Trombones or whatever they want. And everyone stops and they just clap as you pass and you feel that walk.
And it's another way another thing that deepens community.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, people are coming to our town to get married, and I just think it's so nice for them to, you know, be in the town as well. And to a lot of times, well, sometimes rather, there's weddings in churches that we work with, the actual ceremony, and then they will make this procession down from the church to the place. We'll hire bands, have music accompanying them, and people just stop and they're like, wow, these people have come to our town to get married.
The community welcomes them, and that's another thing about a wedding. It may not be your community, but you are entering the community and you're going to be a participant. And it's just a lovely tradition trying to start.
I know sometimes you can end up in a small town in Europe, and suddenly you're invited to the wedding because you're in town.
Absolutely.
And I just think that's great. Yeah. And things, you know, I love seeing sort of a return to that
sort of thing. I
don't
know what
we'd
do, though, Michelle, if people started following the bride and groom and expected drinks and food.
Right. You have
it's happened, actually.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, well, since we're talking about all this, and, you know, Mouthful is broadcast live here on KRCB. It's also listened to on KRCB's website, but it goes out as a podcast. So there are people listening not only all over throughout the country, but in various parts of the world. I've had emails from people in New Zealand, in Israel, lots of places. So if you're listening now and you want to get married in Sonoma County, you got some contacts. So let's talk. How do people get a hold of? Let's start with Barn Diva.
Barn Diva is located at 231 Center Street, and our number there is 707-431-0100.
Okay, that's 707-431-0100.
Yes.
And your website?
And the website is Barn Diva, www.barndiva.com.
Okay, that's barndiva.com.
And Barn Diva is one word, not that it matters.
B-A-R-N-D-I-V-A. Yes, a nickname you had as a child?
Not as a child.
Oh, okay.
As a young adult.
Okay, and Dragonfly, is it dragonflyfloral.com?
It's dragonflyfloral.com and also dragonflyheelsburg.com.
And the phone number, if people want to talk to you about arrangements.
433.
That's area code 707.
433-3739.
Okay, excellent.
And the Studio Barn Diva address is right next to Barn Diva, but it's 237 Center Street.
And does it have a separate website?
It does. It has Artisan Farmers has a website and Dragonfly Floral has a website.
Okay.
But the number there is 707-431-7404.
That's 707-431-7404. And we will not forget Arboretum, the ethical clothing store. For men and women, including shoes and jewelry in downtown Healdsburg. Do you have a website?
We do. The web address is arboretumapparel.com.
That's A-R-B-O-R-E-T-U-M apparel.com.
A-P-P-A-R-E-L.com, correct.
And what is your phone number?
It is 707-433-7033.
It's 433-7033.
Correct.
Well, on that note, thank you all so much. Owen, you know, you brought me this nice bottle of wine. Here's something else Barn Diva does. This is their first wine, 2003 Cabernet, Nudeau Vineyard, Dry Creek Valley.
Dan Fitzgerald, who is our lead bartender, and the grapes were grown behind his house.
That's great. And on that note, thanks to all of you.
Thank you
for having us.
For a great holiday and a good new year. And you meet me back here next week. We actually will have a pre-recorded show because my daughter is celebrating not just an important birthday, but her successful completion of treatment for thyroid cancer.
Yay.
So we're going to be having a big party next Sunday. I'll talk to you 2 weeks from tonight live here on KRCB Public Radio for Sonoma County.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes. Something good, so let's bow our heads and pray. Listen to the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher said.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the Acura TL with Bluetooth phone connectivity. Learn more at Acura.com.